Welcome to Awakening Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
I'd like to start my conversation. Say hi to Terry. Hi, Terry.
Hi, it's so nice to be here, and I'm very honored to be able to talk about our wonderful work.
And so the way that I've asked to sort of begin is I wanted Terry to read something that gives her inspiration, so if you'd do that.
So this is a quote by William James, and it resonates for me. Pursue your purpose with a fearless and restful heart, believing that the future will satisfy your every thought and effort. You must believe that the laws of the universe can never fail.
So I thought we might start our conversation with Terry's history and started around 1967 in the Summer of Love in San Francisco. And so I believe these were your high school age years, correct?
Well, I actually hadn't started high school in 1967. I was only 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And so do you want me to tell my story of hitchhiking from Las Vegas to Haight-Ashbury?
I think a little bit of that would set this would be nice, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just briefly, I was 13 years old, but I had run away from my very violent, very addicted family a number of times. And this time that we're talking about, and I was 13, and at that time everybody was hitchhiking. So me and a friend left, actually, like in the middle of the night. We got a ride, didn't even know where the hell we were going. I saw Haight Street on TV, and it looked like a great place to be with all the hippies and love and peace and all of that. So we set on our way, got a ride, and ended up at the Summer of Love in 1967. And when I think about how amazing it is to be two young girls able to go around by ourselves with nobody trying to do anything but help us. Mm-hmm. So it was obvious that we were runaways, along with a lot of other people who'd kind of dropped out or left or whatever. And we were just staying all up and down Haight Street in different flats with older males and females that basically took us in and took care of us. The only reason why I ended up back in Vegas is because I got sick. And I got, like, pneumonia really bad. And so one of the women said, oh, no, you cannot stay here. You have to go home. And she called the police. Mm-hmm. It was hard for her to do that, but she said, we can't take care of you, and you have to leave.
So you intersected that area of Vegas was where your life that included crime and drugs had taken place. And so if you could kind of shift to your state and what led you to Delancey Street Foundation.
Okay, so when I came back from that runaway, by age 14, I had a needle in my arm, okay? I started shooting heroin, and I basically continued doing that through age 20, meaning that I was running the streets, using drugs, living wherever I could live, and I was going in and out of juvenile a lot. I was lucky because at 18, from 18 to 20, before I got to Delancey Street, I really didn't get in any adult arrests. But during that time, I was in and out a lot of juvenile hall, and I was getting arrested for all kinds of different things.
When did kind of the worst of the worst happened? When was that epiphany? What age and when did, so someone from Delancey Street, you said who wouldn't let you fail.
No, and you know what? When I look back at my life, there has always been somebody that's been there for whatever reason, seeing something in me that I did not see in myself. So when I was getting arrested a lot, there was a man named Greg Dykes. Greg Dykes was a guy that worked at Juvenile Hall, way older guy. He saw something in me, so he used to follow me around. And he would just tell me, you can do better than this, you're more than this. And basically I would cuss him out and tell him to leave me alone, that I was fine. The last time I was in the hospital, so this went on for a few years that he stayed in touch with me. I went to a couple of little programs in Vegas, and he always stayed a part of my life. The last time I overdosed, because by the time I was 20, I overdosed already 3 or 4 times, okay? Uh-huh. So this guy made it so that when I was in the hospital, he came to the hospital when I woke up, and he said to me for the final time, this is the fight you win by giving up the battle. And it was then, because I don't know why it is, I will just say this. My 3 best friends, Dory, Leanne, Sheila, were my family. They all died before age 21 of overdoses. And they died pretty much when I came to Delancey Street and found a life, a family, a community where I could really learn not just to stop using drugs, which is the same thing I do in my high school. It's not just about one thing. It is about taking a person and giving them the tools necessary to live by, to thrive by, to grow, to push you to your best potential, to pull out your strengths instead of always concentrating on your weaknesses. It has to do with having grit, which I've always had. Courage, resolve, strength of character to be able to move forward.
So Terry, when I was reading, what I felt was that, so in service-based, we say, we ask, can you trust the process? And it sounds like Delancey Street Foundation had something that was so extraordinary. And so that, it sounds like you have, if we roll into, now you went, so if you could just say about your education.
No, I had already, I basically was kicked out of school in the 9th grade. I really never went back. I was in and out of high school. So basically 9th grade was my last complete grade, okay? So when I came to Delancey Street, that's one of the things that is included in the circle around you. I was pushed by Mimi Silbert, who was my mentor at the time, to go back to school. I went back to school. I graduated with a bachelor's degree. I went back to school to Golden Gate University and got a master's in public administration. I went back to school to the Wright Institute in Berkeley, started out with a master's in psychology, and made a decision that I wanted to do more. I wanted to get a doctorate. So 20 years ago, I got a doctorate in clinical psychology. So by title, I am a licensed clinical psychologist. But I have to say that the reason why I did that is because I want everyone to know who feels like they are nothing, who always believes that they're on the outside of the circle, that you can get inside the circle, be a part of a wonderful community and family by getting the right people in your life. And that's what I teach my kids at Life Learning Academy.
Go ahead.
Lynn, I just wanted to just jump in here for a second. First of all, very incredible. It seemed like, the level of adversity that you had to endure at such a young age. I guess what I'd be curious about is, how did you process all of that? And even when you at that age, you were too young maybe even necessarily to understand sort of the root causes of why you went in certain directions, why you made certain decisions, so whether it was to drop out of school or to dive into drugs, or that's what your surrounding was. And so maybe if you could help us understand that a little bit. And I definitely believe that grit and resolve has a big part to do with it, but there's also some kind of processing that has to occur to work through those things to move your life forward. And so if you could share a little about that.
Yeah, and, you know, first of all, I think that my biggest strength actually came from my grandfather, who was the only person that I can look back at who was really had incredible strength. So I would say that I think that my foundation had to do with him. Number two, the thing we do at Life Learning, the thing we do at Delancey Street is help people work through the process of dealing with their past, number one. We don't stay stuck in our past. What we do is work through it, let it go, and move on. That is a process. It's a process to not be a young woman and pick men that were just like my father, which is what I see in our kids. Pick men that are either abusive, because I was in an abusive relationship from age 16 to 18, and I could not get rid of this guy. I could not. He was stalking me. He was way older than me. He kept me strung out on drugs. And he ended up finally going to jail when I turned 18. He went to prison. He was an armed robber. So here I am running around not knowing what to do. My own father knew, because he told me, I'm going to find out all about who Dennis is. He found out and did nothing. He did nothing about it. He was an older guy, 7 years older than me, in his 20s, ex-convict, blackened both my eyes, and he did nothing. My resolve is that I'm going to learn how to be the opposite of the people that raised me. And learning how to live every day and understand that there are good people that you can rely on. There are good people that you can trust. You can put your faith in and not just sit there, an angry teenager, not knowing how to come out of it and show your vulnerability. Because my anger is all surface stuff. Right underneath that was always hurt and softness.
Terry, I'm curious. So did you just one day have a revelation that the Delancey process would work potentially, for that you could shift it upstream and you could make like more of a preventative difference? Like, when did you get the idea for the school and how did that come about?
Well, you know, the whole process of the school, because I've started other programs before I was part of the juvenile justice reform with Delancey Street. I ran a program where I was getting my doctorate, and then I also got hired to start a jail program in San Mateo County Jail called Choices. I started a women's program inside the jail. Due to the success of that program, we started a men's program. The people that I got hired with me were all Delancey Street graduates. That program, 20 years later, is still thriving, still run by Delancey graduates, and doing really well. But in between time, because my heart and soul has always been youth, always, because I was somebody that got it, and I desperately, you know, wanted to have an impact on changing kids, because I know that if you get it early and you can really work on them and help them learn to trust and all of that, then they can change. So I became a part of this project that was started by Willie Brown in 1998 or something, I think it was around there. He started this project that Delancey Street was advising on, how to deal with many issues all the way from prevention to working at Juvenile Hall and revamping San Francisco Youth Guidance Center. That all happened. We started a bunch of little community agencies and we started a school because it was clear that there were a group of students that were being failed by the San Francisco Unified School District. They're dropping out. They're giving up on themselves. They're giving up on their education. And what I always have been so bothered by is the fact that 99% of the teens that are killed in San Francisco are high school dropouts. So it is imperative that we create services that they actually, this group of kids, these kids who live in the worst areas of San Francisco and now are being moved out of San Francisco because they can't afford to live here and going to Vallejo, and further places, that we reach these kids by starting a program, a high school with the best quality teachers.
So, yeah. So, you know, I would
so
just love, yeah.
That's what happened. And here we are 18 years later. I need everybody to understand this. I have been running this school for 18 years. We have been creating miracles. We have been quietly doing it, long-standing, high reputation, high evaluation.
Yeah. So I would just love to say, so were my children high school age, upon reading about this school, surely I would want to send my children to a fully accredited school, charter high school, that has, is it 6 or 8 students per class?
It's 6 to 8 Six to eight kids per class.
Okay, so, and then the curriculum includes digital media, culinary arts, engineering, organic gardening.
Yep.
They ensure that the kids get internships and paid employment. There's a homemade nutritious lunch daily.
Yep.
And in 2010, Life Learning Academy was a charter school of the year.
For
and
the state, the whole state.
Yeah, for the state, yeah.
Schools.
Yeah, so and you said when we spoke previously that by the time they leave, 2 years of college will be paid for. You find them jobs. So this is if we can do this, if this can happen for the most vulnerable, I think you know, it's logical that we should be able to do it with those that have more. It's like you've got some kind of secret sauce or something going for education. And so what do you think some of the pieces of that might be?
And the last part of the question was?
Sure. So you are succeeding. So you're more than succeeding. You're transcending. So what do you think are some of the specific underpinnings of that? So, you've said the word circle, like a circle. So, are you
basically asking kind of what do I think are the ingredients?
Ingredients, yeah, that's
yeah,
a good
that
word.
Go
yeah.
into
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, you know what I think is the problem today, and I think it's with addiction, and I also think it's with just the way we look at trying to help people, that we isolate out specific things. So, for example, nowadays we've got to develop a program just for methamphetamine users so we can deal with their methamphetamine problem. And what we do at Delancey Street, what we do at the school is have a circle, and the kid is the in the middle, and all around them are a number of things which have to be included in their lives in order for them to have a full life, and that has to do with education, that has to do with a job, having money, because people need to understand it is unreal to think that these kids are 16, 17 years old and have no money in their pocket. So a job, a quality education, a portion of the circle has to be learning to give back, which we do at our school. I teach this philosophy that talks about each one teach one, which means that every kid in that school, and I have a whole leadership group that no one else has ever been able to really, you know, turn around to wanna, you know, talk to kids, and if a kid isn't coming to school, my leadership people will, okay, John, you're going to call and find out why Sean has not been coming to school, and let's get him back. So it's an each one teach one model. Everything you get, you give back, which creates a feeling of gratitude. And I think I'm really lucky because I have never forgotten where I come from. Nothing will ever make me forget where I came from. So as a result of that, I have gratitude to the ends of the earth. And I understand that for however long that I'm able to do this, then I, as long as I'm standing, and even if I'm sitting down and can't walk, I will continue to try to teach that the way you get it is by giving it, not by sitting around talking about your problems. So included in that circle has to do with having mentors in your life, having good job training through our internship program, and community involvement. So, you know, it isn't just one thing that we provide. So we only have 60 kids, but really working with 60 kids, getting them up, getting them involved. So for, can I give you an example of Catherine, who we hired like 3 months ago, and she gets it. So there's a young girl who basically is homeless right now, who she just somehow kind of bonded with. This kid basically is the sweetest girl in the world, but she has no motivation, no caring. She has a dad that's a drug addict. She's barely making it. So we've tried a lot of things. I have meetings every week with a staff of people that work with these kids. We're in the front every morning when a kid comes in. How you doing? I don't start yelling at them because they're late. But how you doing? You okay? Go have some breakfast. I know you're late. I'll give them a little coffee if they need to. And Catherine has taken this girl, who we've had lots of problems trying to motivate, and has kind of pulled her in on this LLA build concept, which I'm sure you'll ask me about and we'll talk about. But she's made her like her little assistant. And this girl is just like thriving and coming alive. So we're tapping into a piece of Teresa that we didn't know really existed. So she's, you know, she's taken to Catherine. So we all have kids that will really relate to each one of us, and then we start trying to pull it out. Let's do this, let's do that. But then they are accountable and responsible. So if they come to school and they're disrespectful in class, and they do it a few times, we have a student council, and they basically get called in and say, no, you're not going to be disrespectful to our teachers. You're going to learn that in order for you to be successful in life, there's a certain way you got to treat people. So if you don't and you keep coming in here, then you're going to stay after school and do extra duty. What that means is, so one of the kids, I said, no, come on, you're going to mow the lawn today after school. So we go outside, and there's this old school push mower. And he looks at it, and he goes, what's that? I said, that's a lawn mower. He said, where's the motor? I said, you're the motor. Start pushing. And for whatever reason, it is amazing. They do it. They don't say, I'm not doing it. They just say, okay, because what you need to know about teenagers is that they push against structure and crave it at the same time.
They, you said LLA build, and before that you said the word homeless. And so this characteristic is like it's the ultimate vulnerability of these kids.
Right.
That are so we talk about successes, we talk about failures, and I know that you described something that you felt was a failure in your process that happened a couple of years ago, and it's the Shuki story?
Yes.
Yes, and so I think that will lead us nicely into the LLA build to talk about that.
Okay. You know what's amazing about Shuki is that every time I talk about it, it doesn't matter how long it's been, 3 or 4 years, it still is so emotional for me because she was such a bright light and she was only 14 years old. She was beautiful and smart. I think it was 4 of her siblings went to my school and graduated. They all were pretty much raised by the grandmother. The oldest sister was 21 at the time, Jasmine, and Shukriya was there in my school, and so was Amir. And I always stay in touch with Jasmine, who has said you can use her name and our name anytime you want. They love Life Learning Academy. So the grandmother used to drag all these younger kids to the school when they were 8 or 9 to eat lunch and say, as soon as you get old enough, you're coming to this school too. Wonderful woman. And one day she was getting off the Muni bus in San Francisco.
So is it Shuki that something happened? Help me.
What happened was the grandmother was getting off the bus, had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
So all the kids went different places. Mm-hmm. Shuki ended up in a family in Vallejo that really was obviously clueless. She called me one day at Labor Day picnic coming up and said, crying her head off and saying she was in pain. And I called her sister, who called an ambulance, and she died basically due to a burst appendix, which we all know, if it's taken care of when the pains start, you don't die from having an appendicitis. So with that, I left the picnic. I went back to the school by myself. I sat in my office, and I just said, this, I could never forget it. This can never happen again with kids in our school. And myself and Craig Miller, I got him on that Monday when we came back to school and said, we have to do more. I want to create a community. We're going to create a boarding academy. I have 60 kids right now in my school. I want to start out housing the 20 in my school that are homeless, that basically go from bed to bed to bed, trying to find a place to sleep. And I am going to create an environment that is similar to Andover or Exeter, but for kids who will never get an opportunity to live in a thriving community that cares about them, where they're busy and working and going to school and having meetings and having an extended Life Learning Academy family. From that point, we became our own 501(c). We started raising funds. We've raised close to $1 million. I need a total of 2.5 more. We have just hired an architect, and we have a construction company. It's going to be on our campus in the back where our garden is, where we have 22,000 square feet. So it is going to happen. And we are now, I am now noisy. I am coming out, and I'm saying to the community, I have a solution, not just a pie-in-the-sky idea, but a successful school, a person who understands the ins and outs of running a community and helping kids change, because I was there, and making this happen. And so as a result of that, I have contacted, this is what's so amazing, who does this? 15 kids that went to my school and graduated from 15 years ago up until 2015. I called them all. I said, I need you guys to come up and show up to a meeting, because we need to have your support to go out and speak about how this school changed your life. Do you know that every single one of them, without hesitation, showed up to a meeting with myself and Catherine, and all said, we will do whatever it is that you need for us to do. And I told them, anything happens to me, it's not the adults that I'm going to rely upon to make this happen. It is all of you who understand what it's really like to struggle and to work through things that have to make this vision happen. We'll start out with 20 kids, and then we will have a school built for 100.
So I think I remember Catherine told me that Delancey Street has been replicated, and that their model, since it was proven, has been replicated. Do you see what you're doing? This is novel, right? This hasn't been done before, this public boarding academy concept.
A free public school boarding academy, yes.
Uh-huh.
It has not been done with our kids, who have no hope, been kicked out, dropped out, and have no high school motivation. So, yeah, you can look at some programs, like in D.C., there's a SEED program, and there's a couple of other boarding academies, and I think they're pretty much private, but they look like they deal with our kids when you go on their campus, and they're wonderful, don't get me wrong. But they're all high school motivated students. They just don't have money for college. I'm talking about a group of people like myself who were absolutely not high school motivated and really didn't feel like I was going to be able to do anything. I believed that I was going to end up like my three closest friends.
So at service here in our circle and relative to service space, we talk about supporting in more than one form of capital, and I already heard you say whatever it takes. And so we talk in terms of not just financial capital, but things like intellectual capital, spiritual capital, social capital, experiential capital. So what could we do if we were so moved?
So what we're trying to do is get it out there so that we can break ground in January. We need people to make noise, because the truth is, I need people that are going to come up and say, we'll write you a $1 million check to help these kids. That's what we need. I mean, people can say all kinds of things, and we're really meeting so many wonderful people that I cannot tell you. Since Catherine has been here and we hired our first full-time development director, we are out every single day. And every day they say, where have you been? We have not heard about what you're doing. I said, that's because we've just been doing the work. Now I'm coming out. We need money to build this place for these kids to live.
And
social media. So, you know, we're trying to get all of our stuff out there so we get lots of followers and lots of interest and people calling us and saying, what can we do, what can we do, till we can become a community doing that to help the kids. Because my goal is when we do end up building the one for 100, that I will take kids from all over the country.
Do you envision yourself organizing volunteers? So these other forms of capital besides financial capital. So you said social media. You need help with that, maybe.
Yep. And this is Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I just want to jump in. I'm the director of development. So LLA, as Terry has said, it's all about community. So we always have volunteers on our campus from all different aspects of the community, from corporations sharing their expertise with our students on workforce development and career pathways. We have individuals that come and work hand-in-hand with our students to clean up the campus and do a lot of restoration projects. So we are all about welcoming folks to our community, but to work hand-in-hand with our kids on improving our school and strengthening the programs that we already have in place.
So,
great.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to jump in. I mean, and Lynn, I loved your question, because I definitely feel, you know, there are so many ways to sort of contribute in something like this. But, you know, there's really something special that you guys have built here, and none of this happened overnight.
Right.
This is very much years in the making. Terry, just even going through your own process, your own journey, all the individuals at Delancey Street Foundation. And, you know, I think what would be interesting is, where did the idea even for a school like this even come up? You know, when we talk about, you know, building something that will truly succeed, you know, what are the design principles that went into something like this? You know, the values that you built this around. You know, there have been people that have had ideas similar to this, but when it came to execution, it was just a very big challenge for a number of reasons. And so would love to just
absolutely
sort of hear that story of how the idea to actual where you guys are today.
Well, you're talking about the idea for the school or the idea for the boarding component.
For the school and, you know, obviously the boarding school too, but the school as a whole.
Well, the school as a whole, the idea about developing the school was to come up, because as I was saying before, Mayor Willie Brown contracted with Delancey Street because the juvenile justice system in San Francisco was falling apart. So because we're good at dealing with criminals and people who are hopeless, the mayor's office contracted with us to come up with a plan all the way and with all kinds of players that were involved in this plan making. It was myself and Craig Miller, who actually were the ones that started the school, that were involved in this planning process. And so they, you know, we did like a year and a half long research about what were the needs in San Francisco for youth. And we started all the way from prevention, where we started some programs like safety passage at gyms in certain neighborhoods, and we started CARC, which is Community Assessment and Referral Center, which is a community agency that is still going today, that takes kids, and when they get arrested, if it's not a serious crime, instead of locking them up, they go through the Community Assessment and Referral Center, and they try to find some ways of diverting them rather than locking them up. So there's things like that. The biggest lack that we found was kids not being, the needs not being met for their education. So there's a whole group of kids that are the quotes at-risk kids that people couldn't deal with because they couldn't engage them in school, so they were dropping out by the droves. So we started a school based on that. My whole idea was to take the Delancey Street model and replicate it in all of the ways that work within a high school, which is creating community, student engagement, leadership, you know, having them have a little dress code, having them work towards a system of rewards, which if anybody understands the teenage brain, you understand that they're at the height, their brain is the most open right now, and that it's also is dangerous because they're very, you know, very likely to take the wrong kinds of risks. So we teach them the method of stop, think, and decide, which is all over the country now. We've been doing it for 18 years. I teach them, along with our teachers, that every one of you, we teach it over and over again, have the opportunity to stop and think before you react. You have like six seconds for you to say, I don't think I'm going to do this. So we are the adults in their lives that are surrounding them and helping them change.
So how do you choose the other adults in their lives, right? I mean, I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of one of these kids who have come from one of these, I don't even know how to describe how difficult of background it might be.
Exactly.
Right? And so when they come to you, okay, I can understand because you've definitely been there, but how about the other faculty? I mean, do you choose
I train them. And here's the thing. So Craig Miller is my COO, and so for the staff, he'll get the resumes and he'll look at them and he'll say, these all are really, really talented resumes. So here's who we're going to interview. I say, you go ahead and talk to them first. If you like them, then I'll talk to them alone. And I basically interview them the same way I do a student, because I interview every single kid that comes through before I send them to be re-interviewed by students. And when I talk to a staff member, my question is, what is it about you that is going to make it hard for a student to give up, number one? Number two, are you able to not personalize kids' behavior? Because it is not about you. I actually do not know how they get up every morning and come to school. They do because they're motivated and they love our school and they never forget it. But I don't want teachers, I don't care how wonderful their resume is, that doesn't get what we're doing. And I say to them, if you're coming to this school, you're going to do more, not less. You're not going to be able to take off and have your downtime at lunch. We're going to sit in the dining room with our kids, and you're going to teach them how to chit-chat at the dinner table. You're going to teach them manners. You're going to teach them math. You're going to teach them how, you know, to get along with each other, whether they like each other or not. So every single teacher, so I have a teacher, for example, who grew up in L.A. She's our academic director. She's in her early 20s. Brilliant young woman who came from Los Angeles and is a first-generation college graduate from L.A., immigrant family, went to Yale, graduated with a bachelor's degree. And so even though she doesn't describe herself as being somebody that is was really in poverty because she had an intact, close family, but she knows what struggle is and made herself. So every single teacher, like I said the other day to one of the students, well, what the hell can Craig tell me? You know, he doesn't know where I'm coming from. I said, he might not have been where you've been, but I'll tell you what, he can teach you how to be a good friend. He can teach you how to be a good family member, a good boyfriend, and a decent person. So don't you ever judge somebody because of how they look. Excuse me. And that's what we teach them.
I was just observing when you describe what you're looking for in a teacher, the perspective of deep engagement, and I think I see that from what I read in your model for the students as well. And something that captivated me was the classroom remodel project that's on the site. The story about that. Right, where it included like recarpeting the floors with a patchwork with carpet scraps instead of whole pieces of carpet. And there was a quote in there, community is not made in the matching of fabrics, but in the sewing of the seams. I just love that. But that the kids are, they help design the classrooms. They are invited truly into this. Also in deep engagement.
So, you know, thank you, because the thing that I want to really emphasize, you know, I started Facebook, I started going on Facebook a few years ago for one reason, because I wanted to really stay in close contact with the graduates from Delancey Street. And I have hundreds of graduates that I'm in touch with, and guess what they do? Come back and give back to the school. That's the portion of the same circle applies to them as it does my kids. So what happens is I get great carpet, brand new carpet squares donated. I ask my Delancey friends to come teach our kids how to lay this carpet, how to paint the walls, because we're developing a construction curriculum, because there are a number of kids that don't want to go to college, and that's fine. And they, on the first 2 days of school, we just came back, we painted, we carpeted, and we did it all together, along with the teachers. And do you know that we had 100% attendance? So, I mean, it's these things that create community, bonding, togetherness, and great food, which we really believe in. And we cook breakfast and lunch. We have a culinary arts program where we have a wonderful chef that teaches our children how to cook, and they serve the meals, and we eat family style every single day.
So, Terry, what restores you? Because your role, your work in the world sounds like about 100 different jobs. So, what restores you?
This is what's hard for people to understand, and someone asked me that yesterday who was interviewing us for this blog that they're doing, because they're just wonderful little people, and they asked me the same question. I said, it's hard for people to understand. This is not a part of my life. It is my life. I have a husband that I've been married to for 20 years, who's a retired captain in the fire department, and he also graduated from Delancey Street a number of years ago. And he's a great guy because he's the opposite of me in terms of he doesn't have to go, and I have a golden retriever that is my love of life. This is my life. This is my restore. Seeing kids change and stay in touch is what is my life.
Wow.
So one of the things we say at Service Space is that we focus on small acts with great love that create positive ripples in the world. So I thought maybe before we go to Q&A, unless, Amit, do you want another question before we go to Q&A?
Go for it. I'll ask my questions during the Q&A portion as well. So
what I'm going to ask the circle to do is just sort of join with me in this notion that we're going to do a small act with great love right now, and I'm going to read just a short poem. I love poetry. I told Terry that I love poetry. And just a short poem, and from one of my favorite poets, Mary Oliver. It's called "The Poet with His Face in His Hands," on this subject of redemption. And I saw a quote from an LLA student that was that went something like, "I don't have to. Whenever I fall, I get back again. I don't have to, but I do." Here's Mary Oliver's beautiful poem. "You want to cry aloud for your mistakes, but to tell the truth, the world doesn't need any more of that sound. So if you're going to do it and can't stop yourself, if your pretty mouth can't hold it in, at least go by yourself across the 40 fields and the 40 dark inclines of rocks and water to the place where the falls are flinging out their white sheep like crazy, and there is a cave behind all that jubilation and water fun, and you can stand there under it and roar all you want, and nothing will be disturbed. You can drip with despair all afternoon, and still, on a green branch, its wings just lightly touched by the passing foil of the water, the thrush, puffing out its spotted breast, will sing of the perfect, stone-hard beauty of everything." And so with that, I'd like to go to Q&A.
Wonderful.
Open it up.
Yep. For those of you that are on the call, you'd like to ask Terry a question or Catherine even a question, please push *6, and then you'll be entered into our queue. You can also email us at ask@servicespace.org. That's ask@servicespace.org. And then we can involve you into the queue to ask your question as well. And while we wait for folks to do that, I wanted to just sort of dive back into the process. I mean, Terry, if one of your goals today was to really get your listeners engaged and excited about everything that you're doing, mission accomplished.
Exactly. Thank you.
I mean, I can't even wait to just go down and tell my family about what you guys are doing and really sort of spread the word. And so very exciting. But, I can't help but just keep coming back to both your past and really to sort of where all of this stuff has started. Because, when I think when people hear stories such as yours, when people hear things about the great things that you guys are doing at LLA, it just on one level you're inspired. But then there's a point where you almost seem overwhelmed, and you get to a point where, that's so great, but I don't know if I could ever do something like that. And there's, what ends up happening is that people don't end up realizing that there were a lot of small steps that had to occur along the way to get to that point. There were a lot of, failures that had to happen to get to that point, and then getting back up on that bike. You didn't just have $1 million or whatever it took to get things started to necessarily to get this all going. And so, I thought it might be nice to dive into some of those specifics, in terms of how did you guys, even come to designing a curriculum or, you know, when you talk about values, you know, do you guys have a committee that sets up and talks about those things so that there's consistency across the board, or you just know it when you've hired them from the beginning?
Oh, no, because, you know, it takes training to help people understand the complexity of teenagers and the way to engage them. That is a push and pull process where you give them a little and you take a little, and you give them a little and you take. But you always understand. So we have staff meetings, and I train in the, you know, kind of really in cognitive behavioral stuff, if you will, which is teaching kids how to think about their thinking, to tune in and help them understand that they have control of themselves. So, but that takes a long time to change that. They're so engrossed in negative thinking and in beliefs that they're failures that to try to help them learn that they can change the way they feel by the way they think, if they change that, then they understand that their actions will then change. So with the teachers, for example, so there's a kid that is in a group home, very bright kid. He got arrested, and he was coming to school very irregularly before he got arrested. And I really liked the kid, so sometimes he would show up at 11 or 12, very disheveled, and he's clearly on the street corner, but he's so smart. And so I would try to talk to him. But I couldn't really make any inroad because he was toxic from marijuana all the time and whatever else he was doing. So he finally gets arrested. He goes into a group home, and he's at least away from his environment and the pressures. But what started happening, as soon as they allowed him to start going home, right, he's going home into this environment with a parent that they have no money, and she's pregnant yet again, and she's with a guy that doesn't work. And Darius, as young as he is, was providing income by selling drugs and doing all kinds of other things to bring money into the house, and also getting beat by the guy that lives there. So he's starting to act out in his classes because he's going home. So they don't know that. What people look at is behavior. And I'm always teaching them, you know what, this is why we have administrators on duty. We have four or five people that are up in the front. One of them is Josie. Josie is my first student that I hired full-time that graduated from the school 4 years ago. Came from the mission, gang member, dropping out of school, graduated from life learning, and became a leader. So I hired her full-time to be our student mentor, our student, the person that helps them mediate conflicts and all of that stuff. So I'm teaching the teachers that, no, I'm going to deal with his behavior right now. I'm going to let all of you know that work with this boy. Give him a break. Give him support. It's not the time for us to get on him. He came in. It's very difficult for him to talk. I pulled him in, just started talking to him. They all know where I come from because I tell them about myself when I interview them. And I tell them, I only want one thing from you because you don't have anything to give me, and that is your word to nonviolence. I have no idea why they give their word and keep it, but they have, and they continue to for 18 years. We have kids that grow up in the worst environments who see nothing but violence all around them, inside and outside their home, and they don't fight at my school. People cannot understand that. The teachers have to be taught, yes, write us notes about what's going on with him, but get off of him until I can get him through this tough time. And we did. He came back this semester. You know, he's been out for the summer working the whole time. He's going to graduate. And every single kid in that school, I know their stories. And so I share that with the teachers in the staff meeting so that they don't just look at behavior and they understand that this is the process of teaching them how to help these kids.
Wow. And it seems like, you know, such a incredible shift, you know, that, and I'm sure that there's a light that sort of, you know, turns on with some of these kids when they realize really what it is that they have here before them.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So we just, you know, what I'm really, one of the things that I really missed growing up, which I found in Delancey Street, which is really important to create at Life Learning Academy, and I have, which is the thing of tradition. You know, it's really important that we create some traditions. So at Thanksgiving, we have a wonderful, huge Thanksgiving meal. And I'm always talking to them about finding your gratitude. And at Christmas time, I have a friend in Washington, D.C., who for the past 10 years, every single year, wraps up a gift individually for every kid in our school and gives each one of them $20. And at Christmas time, we have a beautiful Christmas tree. We have gifts under the tree. We play Christmas music. We have a Christmas meal. We do a little Christmas play that they themselves put together, kind of like one of those Scrooge plays, you know, stuff like that that they come up with. It's fantastic. And they all remember that. Because I have them all write a thank you letter, because it's not just, which is part of the problem. Everybody says, let's just go find these poor kids and give them things. No, that is not the answer. It is empowering them and giving them, yes, but making them earn their way, which creates their pride in themselves and their confidence in themselves that they can make it and change.
So, you know, obviously, you know, I would assume that, you know, your clinical psychology background has been extremely helpful, both for your own processing and working with these kids. Do you guys have other counselors that are on staff that work
We don't need them. You know, honestly, if there is a kid that really needs more. See, I don't look at it like that. And to be honest with you, when I sat in my PhD program, I was amazed at how I didn't get a whole lot from what was going on. Being a kid who was sent to counseling because I was acting out in school instead of them looking and saying, "Wow, I get it. Her environment in her family is a complete disaster. No wonder she's angry. No wonder she's fighting." It wasn't me that had the disorder, really. It's the family system. So I don't really, I mean, when there are kids that look really depressed, I have three or four people that are therapists that do come to meet with them, absolutely. But they have to be on the same page. In other words, I want them to empower them, not to take them back through their history when they keep having to go back into the environment. I want them to be able to teach them tools to strengthen them because they have to go home every night. It isn't to open them up. It's to empower them. So honestly, the way I changed wasn't through any kind of traditional therapy. It was by coming into an organization, finding my strengths, yelling at me about the things that were going to get me in trouble, and keeping me moving.
I think I should introduce you to my wife. Definitely keeps me moving. I have a question that came in from Ronnie here in Washington, D.C., and she enjoyed the story that you just shared about the student that you hired and was wondering if you had any other stories of memorable students over the course of the last 15, 18 years.
Oh, my God. That have graduated. Are you kidding me? Yes. Do you have enough time for me to go through all of the students, as I was saying, about my ambassadors that showed up? It is so amazing when I show you. So, for example, let me talk about Brandon Jackson, who knows I use his name. Brandon Jackson, this is a great story. He's one of the kids that showed up. He is one of my LLA alumni ambassadors for LLA Build. So he's a kid that he came to me. Somehow he came to be interviewed. I turned him down because I felt like, no, I don't feel, I think you're not really sincere. I think you just want to come here and hang out with your friends because he had been getting arrested a lot. I just didn't feel like he really wanted to be at the school, that he wanted to just come hang out. And I told him no. So he starts calling me. He finds a way to get my cell phone number. He calls me and calls me, and I'm sitting there with my husband. I said, I have no idea why he keeps calling me. He goes, well, tell him. So I finally answer the phone, and Brandon says to me, Terry, you of all people should know that everyone deserves a second chance. Oh, God. So now I'm completely silent. And my husband goes, tell him. And then he goes, Brandon says, I have no place else to go. So then I whispered into the phone, oh, okay, can you start tomorrow? Do you need me to get you some clothes? He came. He was a wonderful, he turned out to be such a wonderful kid. He was homeless. And there's a friend that he had at the school who I went to this kid's mother and said, please take him in. He did. Brandon stayed at the school for, I think, 3 years. He graduated, and now a few years later, he just got an award for being a kid who used to be in a gang that came back to the neighborhood and gives back to kids who are in gangs. I have so many stories like that that I will sit here on the phone with you and never get tired of telling you about all of them.
Well, I definitely want to hear more of those stories, but we have a caller in the queue. And for those of you that do have a question for Terry, please push *6 and you'll be entered into the queue. I'm going to go to one of our callers.
Hi, Terry. This is Mish in New York City, and listening to you is really bringing tears to my heart.
Oh, good.
From what I'm hearing, it's like, would you say the main ingredient or what's happening here is you're giving them love, you're making them feel worthy. You're just like you become the family that they never had, and that this is the foundation of what is creating the success that you're having, that it's the love?
100%, but it's not just the love. It's the fact that they know it's love, that it's not judgment about mm-hmm. who they are, but it's mm-hmm. love to be able to, like a parent has to do, to say, I love you, but I'm not going to let you walk off a cliff.
Right. So these are kids that never, most of them didn't have a family life, and they come to you, and it's like you become their family.
Absolutely.
Well,
and I listen to them, and I also want to say that I teach the teachers that the biggest skill you can have, which is a pain, because teenagers just want to go on and on and on and on, but you need to hear them out. Because you have to know, and I teach a parenting class at Delancey Street also in the evenings for people that are resuming with their children, and I tell them, you need to know what your teenager is thinking. Because so many times what happens is people tend to want to cut them off in lecture, and I tell them, you must listen. And then teach, listen, and teach. That's what's the biggest. They don't get listened to. Do you know? All of their parents just tell them, be quiet. I'm the parent. You're going to do what the hell I'm saying. And then they go do what they want. They say, uh-huh, okay. And then you don't know what they're doing. So I know what these kids are doing every day, all day. If they're missing from their class, our teacher gets a hold of us up front, and I will find them. If they come in high, I will make them mow the lawn till they get sober. I do not send them home, and I don't suspend. And I started not suspending long before the new thing came out in San Francisco. You may or may not know about it, the big no suspension thing, because most of the time people are afraid to deal with these kids. I am not afraid to deal with them, and I don't want to send them home. I want them there.
Well, I hope that this catches on and that government funding can one day be able to create many more schools like yours. And God bless you for everything you do.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Please spread the word.
I will.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mish. Appreciate that. Yeah, so that brings up a good question, and I know Lynn had alluded to it earlier, right? So So let's say at some point in time, let's hope that, you know, that you're able to get, you know, a substantial amount of funding. I mean, how do you replicate this? I mean, we can't clone you as much as we'd like to, or your staff. You know, how do we build other programs that are like this?
It is a process that anyone can replicate if you get the right group of people that are dedicated to wanting to do it. And that's what I teach my teachers, and that's what I teach my kids. And the ones that are the alumni, they will be, they know how to do it. They will carry it on. And the young teachers that I have, some of which would be really good at it, will carry it on, because it's carrying on a process. It's carrying on dedication and belief in change and belief in our kids and pushing them in the right direction and having always not you and your feelings in tow, but what is in their best interest.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that so often that aspect is definitely forgotten.
Yes.
And so I'm glad that you brought that up. You know, one of the other aspects I wanted to talk about was how, you know, this model obviously is very unique, but, you know, I feel like other schools, you know, other just traditional public schools can learn from it. The inner city schools can learn from the way that they approach, because I definitely think that in some, no matter how hard or good, well-intentioned a lot of the individuals are, you know, there are parts of the system that are broken. And so, you know, are there things that can be done even at a policy level that can change the way that we're approaching education? Or does it really just have to be this hands-on all the time?
So this is Catherine, and I will say, in terms of the subject of replication, we have folks coming through our doors all the time. We've had hundreds of individuals and organizations over the past 18 years travel to actually see the campus, to meet our kids, to meet our faculty, to really understand kind of our secret sauce and take the ingredients of that and implement them into their organizations, or whether if it's, you know, an entrepreneurial endeavor and they're creating something. So we continue to do that. We have received funds from the state of California for replication projects in terms of putting together studies and guides for these folks who are visiting us to take back with them. And we will continue to do that. We love to do that. Terry is incredibly generous with her time and happy to get on the phone with folks and really spread what we're doing. And I think that with the Boarding Academy, because this is the first of its kind, once we open our doors, we know that country, literally, people will be coming to our doors to say, how did you do this? How do we do this?
Right.
How do we bring it elsewhere? And so we really do feel that the resources and enthusiasm will come forward in a massive way once this academy opens.
Well, you know, I think the idea of the academy itself and having a place for these students to be on site is wonderful. So then that begs the question, since you don't have it right now, and some of these kids are coming from homeless backgrounds, where do these kids go after spending a day at the academy now?
Well, that's the thing. The idea is that we create, which is just what works, since we have such a high attendance rate, we have a 95% graduation rate, and the school district, the Unified, San Francisco Unified, has about a 70-something percent, is that as difficult as it is, they get there. And we also, because they go home into this horrible environment, but they spend a lot of their hours and their waking moments in nothing but positive, fun, exciting place. And so when kids, every time, they know that they can come in the morning, be in a bad mood, and people aren't going to be on them, and we'll notice that they're in a bad mood. And so the other second part is that I went before a foundation and told them that I have about 10 to 15 kids at times that can't get on the bus due to safety issues, and I asked them to buy us a van, and they did. So I have a safety passage van that will pick up 10 kids that Josie, the student that I told you about who used to be in a gang back in the day, about 8 years ago, is the person that in the morning picks up these students and brings them to our school in safety and takes them home. So what I do every single year is look at it with Craig and a few others and say, we need to look at what's not working, and then we revamp it. If I ever get to a point in my life where this stuff becomes rote, I need to do something else. But it never will. It never becomes rote. It becomes, I am propelled daily forward by watching kids feel a part of a community and start thriving and growing. There's no better feeling in the world than that.
Yeah. So what does a typical day look like for a student at LLA? What sort of classes are they taking? I mean, there's only, you said 60 kids right now?
Yes.
That are there, and this is a high school, so, I mean, you're looking at multiple grades. I mean, are classrooms done differently? Is it a traditional style? You have the group in 9th, 10th, 11th, or people taking math at a 10th grade level, but English maybe at 9th grade? How does that work? What does a typical day look like for the kids?
Sure. So this is Catherine. It is grades 9 through 12, and we have, you know, a 6-to-1 ratio in our classes. Our class periods are longer than the typical high school class, so they're typically an hour and a half to 2 hours at times, and that allows the teacher to engage one-on-one with the students and to also lead hands-on interactive activities. So, for example, if you're in our history class, our teacher, Ellie, uses music, digital media, art within her history lesson. So our kids do not do well learning by the textbook, and I think that a lot of us are understanding as the education system and the needs evolve in the country, experiential learning is becoming a bigger and bigger deal. We've been doing that for 18 years, and that works with our kids. So hence the need to have a longer class period time to have those activities be that much more meaningful to our kids. So when you come in the morning, I think that this is, you know, an important thing to highlight. Terry's referenced it a few times. Our kids come in the morning and are greeted by at least two staff people. They sign in. It's, hi, how are you? What's going on? Go get some breakfast. And then classes begin. There are small break times in between. And then about 12:30, we have that special lunch. Some of our kids, the class period before lunchtime, for a portion of our kids, is culinary. So they'll be in the kitchen with our chef, Sabina, cooking the meal for everyone. So the kids cook the meal. They serve the meal. At our tables, there's no cliques. There's no, you can hang in the corner with your two best friends. It's every single week. You are assigned a table with 3 to 4 different people and a staff person. So you are learning to get along with all of your classmates despite your differences. And, you know, we put our kids in a situation where they end up learning that there are more similarities between them than differences. After lunch, class periods continue, and at times, you know, because we are such a community, we will have days where it's a clean up the garden day, and we're all out in the back together cleaning up the garden, music, dancing around, helping, and having, you know, a community-wide service project. So we do plenty of that, and we're also, you know, taking our kids out into the city and exposing them to different companies and career pathways. So we are able to pivot in a number of directions. It never becomes stale. And our teachers, you know, our COO says it so well, that our teachers love working at Life Learning Academy because they can be their own entrepreneurs and create special environments within their class and have a lot more freedom than a typical teacher does in the general school system.
And from a curriculum perspective, I mean, they have the freedom to create sort of, you know, what they feel would be most effectively learned using whatever different mediums, or is there still a certain set of guidelines that they have to follow for like a history course or a math course or what may be?
So we definitely, I mean, we teach to state standards. We have, you know, the traditional requirements that every high school in the state has. But there definitely, our teachers basically take that and integrate experiential learning and create their own type of activities and lessons plans to be able to teach our kids through a different avenue. So we have, you know, we have textbooks, we have a library, we have the traditional educational tools, but we have our teachers layer on kind of their own creative angle to things.
So, you know, we've heard some stories about some the kids that have kind of come through and have been transformed. How about some of the faculty over the years that, you know, the school, the kids, how are the faculty, you know, are there any stories that stand out about an individual where they've been transformed personally?
So our teachers, what's remarkable, we have an unbelievable retention rate. Our teachers do not leave. Most of our staff have been there 12-plus years. We, you know, right now SFUSD is advertising on the news bonuses to try to recruit teachers into the system. There is a huge, huge problem, and I think that that goes on in many other cities across the country. We are never, ever in a situation where we're sitting there making class schedules during the summer saying, oh, God, we need to fill this staff position. Nope, everyone gets back August 1st and prepares for those kids to come back through the doors. So it's really special. It's another special component to LLA.
That's wonderful. And after school, do you guys have after school programs as well?
We don't. We have many kids, though. There's always service projects and things that, you know, need to be cleaned up around the school. And so we definitely have kind of one-off opportunities. And we our workforce development director works very hard to not only have every kid out on Fridays at internships, but also encourages our kids to pursue paid employment. So many kids have a part-time job opportunity after school.
That's great. And then in regard to these internship programs or whatnot, I mean, how do you guys set all of that stuff up for the kids?
Sorry, how do we structure that? Or
yeah, how do you guys structure that? I mean, you know, with community partners and whatnot.
Yeah, so we have a network of over 40 community partners, everything from mom-and-pop businesses to corporations like LinkedIn that you know, are bought into what we're doing at LLA, and they have to create their own diverse pipelines of talent. So it's a win-win for the business community and for LLA. And we have a job success class that supports these kids. So we're not just sending kids out to an internship and saying, all right, go. We're taking them back in and saying, okay, you can't have your phone out. You can't be doing social media. You can't, you know, you have to look, you know, you have to be dressed professionally, look people in the eyes. All of those soft skills are things that we need to teach. And we have a specific class called Job Success where we do that. We prep and then we debrief with the kids. And it's interesting because I've worked in the nonprofit industry for about 12 years and have seen a lot of different workforce development programs. At LLA, we started 2 weeks ago, and on the first Friday of that week, workforce starts. So there is no, you know, we're going to sit around and think about it. We're just going to get to work. Which is pretty remarkable. So second week of school yesterday, our kids, we had maybe 6 kids in the building doing on-site internships because our newer kids learn those soft skills and work within the school to have that extra layer of supervision from our staff. everyone else was out at their internship placements or interviewing. Hello?
Hello? Oh, did we thought we lost you.
Oh, here I am.
Okay.
Yep, no, we're here.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I, there's a couple of things that we like to do before we close off on the call.
Okay.
But before I run through that, wanted to just deeply thank all of you for joining us on the call, but to especially to Terry and to Catherine for being a wonderful guest and sharing about the beautiful, beautiful work that you're doing, and to you, Lynn, for guiding us through that conversation. So, like we like to do, if we could just take a brief moment of silence, and this one in gratitude for all that we've heard and has been shared with us today.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.